Welcome to episode 171 of Red Bull Rewind. My name is Spencer Luganbuehl, and today my special guest is handicapping analyst from Gulfstream Park. It's Brian Natto. Me and Brian go over three races from this past Saturday at Gulfstream Park. Those races were 2, 3, and 11. And some angles that we talk about are how to handicap a synthetic track now that it's been in for almost a year at Gulfstream, and also how important layoff lines are against similar contenders. This is Red Board Rewind. It's the same old story in this cycle. We go back and forth, we go back and forth. It ain't good for me what we do this for. We go back and forth, won't do this no more. And I would like to welcome in my special guest for this week's Red Board Rewind. It's been far too long since having my man from Gulfstream Park, Brian Natto, on. Brian, how are you?
Hey, Spencer. It's always good to hear from you, man. Yeah, I'm doing well. And summer's kind of wrapping up, and fall too, I guess. And we're eagerly looking forward to early December and turf racing returning at Gulfstream Park. We've all kind of had it circled on the calendar for quite some time, and it's going to come to fruition in less than 2 weeks. So yeah, really excited about that down here.
I always wonder, and obviously with you covering the circuit year round, you could probably tell me a lot better. Do you find it that the racing, because obviously everyone follows in December because all the other tracks kind of slow down, but I feel like it would be tougher to, you know, a tougher circuit during the off time, those 3 days a week, because A, there's less racing. There's probably maybe a little bit more layoffs involved in that aspect. But everyone who follows Gulfstream in that time is pretty much going to be as sharp as they come. So I would imagine that that would be the tougher time to try to beat Gulfstream Park than it would be in the December meet, you know, obviously when we have every other buddy shipping in, et cetera. Yeah. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know what? As you were asking that question, I was like, no, it's totally the opposite. But then when you finished what you were saying, I do agree with you in that, like, you know, there's no real stone that goes unturned for the most part over the summer, because, you know, you see a lot of, you know, the gang's all here kind of thing. You see those kind of horses coming back and, you know, things like that. And some of the barns have left for the season, you know, the Pletchers and that kind of Christophe Clement, you know, just came back and ran his first horse last week. Todd Dowd has the barn. He's been here for a couple of weeks. But yeah, so you get a lot more of the locals and you see them a lot. So you're right in that it's tough to unearth something too crazy, because pretty much everybody might is kind of can see the same thing you might be seeing. So you definitely get a better feel for the horses. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And I think you really get their nuances to in and out, but that doesn't necessarily always equate to, you know, success or at least value at the windows, because like I said, a lot of people are kind of seeing the same thing.
Another thing I was curious to get your opinion on, now synthetic has been, you know, at the track for quite a while at Gulfstream Park. It's, you obviously have dirt, synth, and turf. Do you feel like that is just a positive for the racetrack? Do you wish that other tracks that could do it would also move to having the three separate surfaces? That way that you can pretty much race, you know, if it gets rained off the turf, guess what? They're going to the synth. And I feel like that helps the, obviously, the horse population and keeps the races, you know, pretty full.
Yeah, it definitely the latter. There's no doubt about that. It keeps the races full. You know, I'm not going to speak for other tracks, but what I will, you know, say about Gulfstream Park is you know, we know the weather down here and summer and Hollandale Beach kind of thing, and even the winter for that matter. But, you know, you can get a flash storm and that just blows things out. So I think the Tapita has really helped. There's no doubt about that, because, you know, there have been instances, obviously we haven't had turf in a little bit, so we've got to dig back a little, but you know, there were instances while we were still running on all three surfaces where we'd have to take a race off the turf, you'd get more horses in that race. So I think it's great, because, you know, we've all seen before they implemented this, you know, nobody wants a five horse off the turf race, you know, with a 4-5, a 7-5, and, you know, three, 4-1. So I think it's really has been beneficial. There's no doubt about it. And you know, I think that aspect of it will just kind of flex its muscles even more come a couple weeks from now.
Were you familiar with, obviously you've handicapped every service, but how familiar were you with, you know, the Tapeda when they first dropped into Gulfstream? Did you feel pretty confident when you were handicapping the races, or did it take, you know, a couple months for you to get accustomed to, like, okay, you know, this is what the bias is going to look like a lot of the times?
Yeah, I don't really think anybody was comfortable with it. Mm-hmm. You know, it had been a long time since Keeneland. I actually spent two full spring meets at Keeneland when they had the poly track. It was 2007 and 8. But, you know, we're talking about A-plus level tracks, and it just really never you've never really come about that. I mean, since Santa Anita and out in California got rid of it, and it's been quite some time now. So I feel like, you know, a lot of times when Ron and I, Nicoletti, when we pull some stats on Tapeda, a lot of times we'll just go back like 6 months, because I definitely think, and we've turned the corner on a year now, maybe I should say 8 or 9 months, but I definitely feel, Spence, like there was an acclimation point, you know, like where the 3 months we all, and trainers included, all needed to kind of sort of figure it out. What was going on? How's it going to play? And honestly, I think maybe, even the powers that be had to do that too, because if you look at the races now compared to them, times are, you know, sprint times are a lot quicker. But I feel now, and we can get into it throughout the discussion today, that we, at least if nothing else, we at least do have a feel for how it's supposed to play and what to look for.
Well, let's get into this discussion. We're going to talk about a synthetic race in the second race to talk about, but let's talk about that first race, race number two from Gulfstream Park. It was a 62,000 beaten clamor. These fillies and mares have not won three races, 1 mile on the dirt. This race for me was super interesting. I had really liked Arrow Shape going into it. Obviously, the scratch didn't help me there, and I ended up just trying to figure out exactly what I could try to find in here. I thought Look Up to Heaven at 20-1 was a very interesting horse. If you look back, you know, the last time this horse had won a race was for 12-5 at Gulfstream, 6.5, and had an okay buyer for the level at 12-5. Now, the last two races haven't been fantastic, but they did improve from a 49 to a 54. And that last race at 12-1, I didn't think was terrible in the mud. And I just wondered maybe if this one wasn't going to pop up here and just, you know, maybe run a little bit better, having seen those two races on the improve, maybe improve one more time to get into that kind of buyer par level for this type of level of a race. I also thought when you see a horse like Caged Pixie, this one dropping in from 10 to 6 to 6250, has won, you know, last out, had a race that was won three back. I just feel with these types of horses, when they're winning, you know, in bunches at the claiming levels, the hardest thing about claiming races is the horses are so inconsistent. So when I see a horse like Caged Pixie at that 6-1 line, I was surely interested in that runner as well.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, and that was the only 3-time winner in the race too. And I think when I actually made them, I'm making the morning line now with Pete on vacation. And when Arrow Shape came out, obviously it really hurt a lot of the value. Mm-hmm. I was pretty darn okay with Capri Day. Obviously, I didn't like the price or the expected price, and, you know, wouldn't really be betting the horse at a short number, but it's Ronaldo Richards, who's just been really just prolific down here, you know, over the past, I'd say, 3 months or so. And that race last time, actually, we showed it on the morning show. There was a lot of trouble in that race as well, and she still just blasted the door off of them. And me personally, I actually like, in these lower level claiming races, I like horses coming in off like a dominant win. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't bother me about the rise of class, because you get, and this race is kind of one of them. You get a lot of these horses that are kind of littered at this condition. Ellie Resistant to the outside, you know, 5 losses in a row. Look Up to Heaven, 4 of them. You know, even Arrow Shape, who obviously came out. I print 8 deep now, and I don't see a win on her page. So, you know, I'm more apt to go with the now horse in spots like this, especially for a jockey trainer, you know, Miguel Vasquez is here and coming in off a dominant win.
I love the fact that you brought up, too, just to get into just the handicapping process, you only print 8 deep. I know, I believe on the form it's 12 deep, and on Formulator for me, I only print 10 deep. What made you want to decide to, you know, take less races in the past performances? Just the fact that you're kind of just looking for the closer up form, and, you know, whatever they did 10, 11, 12 races back was pretty much last year and just didn't matter so much in the handicapping process for yourself?
Yeah, and I'm just cheap as hell. I'm sick of paying for tone. I don't know. You know what? I kind of thought, what's the difference? I mean, you know, and especially if you're talking graded stakes, maybe it's a little different. But mm-hmm. when you're talking some of these claimers, and I think it's it none more so true than 6,250s, which mm-hmm. is our bottom here. How apt are they at getting back to a race 10 starts ago? You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
To me, I always say this to a friend, a longtime betting partner and friend, and he'd be like, oh, this horse had a 93 back in, you know, 2020 or something like that. Yeah. I would say to him, that's like 17 years ago for when you're talking about a 7-year-old claimer that's run 40 times, you know? So I kind of just said, you know what? I think 6 is too tight, but 8's a good number. Cuts down a little bit on printing out stuff. And, you know, I also kind of just said in my head, how often am I looking at a race 9 and 10 back? I don't think I honestly, if I've missed something once since I've done it, maybe that's a lot, you know?
Can we say that Capra D is the top pick for you in this race?
It was, yeah.
Capra D for Brian. I'm going a little bit of lick up in heaven to hit the board. Caged Pixie was interesting for me at a price. Those are my choices. Let's see who gets their non-3 winners lifetime win right now.
They are off. Look up to heaven. Cross is over there early with a nice break. She moves down at the inside a little bit later. Also advancing up in the sitter with Capri Dre. To put her inside on the outside 4 wide, Ellie Reese Easton. With Cage Pixie moving up in heavy traffic. So 5 across, moving across the backstretch. Thrilling Baby. Just 3 links off that top flight. As they make their way across the back stretch, the quarter was 24-4. And it's Look Up to Heaven to assert her authority dead at the inside to take over the lead. That's Look Up to Heaven, a short lead. Caged Pixie to her outside. As they make their way across the back stretch, Capri Dre's up a 3 wide as Ellie Reese Easton continues carried 4 wide there. With the 2 links back to Little Belita, following dead at the rail from 5th. It's a 4 more to a Thrilling Baby as they move past the half here in 48-2 and onto the far turn. Look Up to Heaven there at the inside with Caged Pixie next door. Capri Dre still in the mix as Ellie Resistance dropped just a length off the top trio. As they move around the far turn, Capri Dre. Vasquez starts to get busy on Capri Dre. Caged Pixie is there between horses. Ellie Reese Easton battles on there 4 wide. Look Up to Heaven starts to drop back a tick. They're off 3/4 and 1, 13-3. Capri Dre powers into the lead. Caged Pixie trying to battle back there in between fillies. Look Up to Heaven's dead at the inside. Ellie Reese Easton is 4th. They move into the final 1/8 of a mile. Capri Dre a short lead. Caged Pixie trying to come back off the canvas here. And it's Caged Pixie who emerges with the lead. Caged Pixie battled off Capri Dre.
It was Caged Pixie getting the job done. The winning mutual being $13. The winning buyer, $63. So pretty much a little bit higher than the average buyer par. Capra D runs that 59 that we just are used to seeing with this one. Look Up to Heaven clunks up 11-1. I think the biggest thing about this race, and we had kind of talked about it, is just, you know, finding the horses that have those big blowout wins or just seem to be the most informed of all the claiming types. And the one thing for me that worried me about Capra D, and this one still ran well enough, the drop from 12 to 62.5. Like, for me, I just don't want to take horses that win for 12 and then are in for 6. What could have possibly gone wrong? The trainer obviously knows this horse is getting claimed. And for the bigger barns, it makes sense. Like, they don't even know what they're looking at with this horse 9 times out of 10. But I would think for a guy who, you know, 22%, only 19 starts at this meet, he probably has a small barn, and this one was probably one of the better ones in there.
Yeah, he spots his horses really well. It's one of the reasons why he's Ronaldo Richards we're talking about has mm-hmm. a big percentage. And then don't forget too, you're going from a 2L to 3L, and you're running a 58 buyer. You know, this horse is probably, you know, not probably not going to be able to compete at a 12-5-3L. So I kind of think it was, she was in the right spot. And as you alluded to, she basically ran a race, a winning race. It's kind of tough. Cage Pixie with all, you know, did have three lifetime wins. Two of them were at two turns. And I'm looking at her now and she had run a 53. So, you know, that 63 kind of pops a little bit out of nowhere. And I think Spence, I think Pacaprede wins this race probably seven times out of 10, six times out of 10 with that 59. But yeah, Cage Pixie blew up a little bit for Gerald Bennett, who's, you know, going to win races in Florida, obviously at Tampa, but Gulfstream Park as well.
Let's move on to the next race. We're moving over to the synthetic. Race number 3 from Gulfstream Park, maiden 16,000, 5 furlongs on the synth. I'm excited to hear what you thought. I was just so back and forth in this race. I threw a lot of horses out. Interested to hear what you had liked originally in this one.
Yeah, I went 7 deep in my, you know, I do, do a pick 5. Yeah, exactly. I do a pick 5 every day. And I went 7 deep. There was only one horse I did not use. You know, they all kind of look the same on paper. So me personally, I always love to see horses like Gam Gam Joanne, who had run is not even the right word, who had basically walked in 3 starts on dirt. And then Jen Young, who does very, very good on Tapeta, moved her over to Tapeta last time. And all of a sudden she woke up at 46-1 and was a pretty darn good fourth because she had trouble that day too. And she was super wide on the far turn. And, you know, if you're looking at your form as we do this, it's right there in front of you. You got a 0, you got a negative, you got an 11, you got a negative, bang, 41 fourth with trouble. And all these other gals in here, basically, you know, you look at them, you kind of know exactly what they can and they can't do. And that's run pretty slow and, you know, get a piece or two. I know Ave Phoenix, I think, was pretty clearly the horse to beat, but, you know, she's going to run in the mid 40s like she does every single time. And from there, I mean, Oaxa didn't run at all last time for, you know, in for a quarter. Now she's dropping and she's on the rail. That scared me a little bit. What are you going to do with the 7 Valissima? I have no idea. Jose D'Angelo's got the 8, a perfect set, and Jose's as good a trainer as we have here, and this horse is essentially eased on debut. So I thought, you know, these are always the type of horses I want to go to, and she's only 0-5 too. You know, you got an 0-21, you got an 0-9, 11 in here. The losses are adding up. My line in the sand is 15 of them. I don't care if you run second 15 times, beating the neck in every start, you're not on any tickets for mine. So
my line is usually 10. I ended up breaking it here. Ava Phoenix, listen, 11, but goes up from 5-2 to almost 6-1. And for me, obviously, when a horse like that doesn't get any action, I just want to be contrarian. And when I don't like anything else in this race, people can't, I mean, listen, they can beat you up if you pick a price and the horse doesn't win, but I'd rather bet this horse at 6-1 then take Oaxa coming off of the long, or just, you know, a horse like that coming off of the rail with a 36, that didn't seem to want to do it. Valissima coming off that long layoff. The 54 first time out was good on the turf, but then didn't show anything next time out. Has a little bit of turf breeding. Sometimes that will be good enough for the synthetic. Gam Gam Joanne is just one that I just didn't skip over, but again, the trainer stat and the way you brought it up is perfect. Absolutely did nothing the last 3 times on dirt. They go to synthetic and boom, all of a sudden it's back to that turf race on the debut. So if any horse is going to, again, improve second time out on a surface, this one at 4-1 ends up going off at almost 6.5-1. I mean, this one's kind of a steal in this race when, as you had said, everyone kind of looks alike except for this one, which, you know, comes back to an old Mark Kramer chapter in one of his books where it's just like, you know, Which one is the oddball out? And this one was Gam Gam Joanne.
Yeah, no doubt. And I, you know, Ave Phoenix at 6-1 is like unfathomable. So they're kind of telling you, you know what, she's not going to run today. I mean, how is she? Listen, I've made bad morning lines. Don't get me wrong, but this was not one of them. I mean, she's supposed to be favored. She's supposed to be, if you don't want to say she's 5-2, you want to say she's a 7-2 favorite. But I mean, who's better than her up to this point? Yeah. And to see her up there at 6-1 just really made no sense.
Four. Me was Ava Phoenix trying to buck the trend. It's Gam Gam Joanne 4. Brian, let's see who gets it done and breaks their maiden right now.
Early speed from Velichisaba, who advances up there on the far outside as they make their way across the backstretch. It is Velichisaba who just drops off the early pair. Oaxaca is dead at the inside. Oaxaca's under steady pressure from Spiteful Sis. Velichisaba started well there. She's back just off the top pair, third. Gam Gam Joanne's up a 3 wide. She's fourth, just a length and a half off the lead. Ave Phoenix next fifth. The quarter was 21-3 as they make their way around the far turn. Feel like guessing next in sixth with the perfect set out seventh. And at the back of the pack, that's Raid of Blessing as they move around the far turn and towards the top of the stretch. Spiteful Sis, a short lead dead at the inside. Gam Gam Joanne turns up the pressure to her outside as Velichisaba dives on through dead at the rail late. Ave Phoenix moves up at the outside fourth, but at mid stretch, it's Gam Gam Joanne who takes over from Spiteful Sis. Gam Gam Joanne powers at the lead here 6-1, and it's Gam Gam Joanne who will win it.
And Gam Gam Joanne gets it done. 52 the winning buyer, $15 the winning mutual. When I saw this horse cross the finish, I was like, well, I am the biggest dum-dum in the world, because everything that you said makes just so much sense. And seeing that 41 last time out, I always talk about it with my turf horses. I'm always willing to take, you know, a horse second time on the turf that showed improvement on the first time on the surface, and this one just skipped by my head. I think it was just, you know, a rushed handicapping, a botched job, and I ended up on a horse that ended up running, you know, like we had said, a lower 40 this time out, 42, but at the price, I think I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I mean, it was, I was very surprised that she paid $15, and, you know, I'm certainly not going to, no pun intended, red board too much, because I was seven deep in the race. It's kind of annoying that she won, to be honest with you. Your top pick wins when you go seven deep. But, you know, it was all right there for you. She really shouldn't have been that price. I mean, it sounds silly, but 41 was like that's a number to be, you know, taken seriously in this race. So she improved, and you know, we can hit on this now, too, because we're going to go – we're going to go off the Tapita for our next race. You have to be close sprinting on the Tapita. Mm-hmm. Horses are not making up ground, and sometimes it doesn't matter how fast you go early. You're not going to pass horses. You're not going to get past late. Routing, it's a totally different story. Sometimes it doesn't matter how slow you go. But, you know, food for thought going forward, I would certainly – start every race, as I think you should anyway, but start every race identifying who is going to be close early, because that's often going to give you a lot of dividends late.
I think it's also very interesting if you just look through every single, you know, racehorse here. Ava Phoenix was running in the 40s for a bunch of races. The other one was Reign of Blessing, who was 0-21. So you had 2 0-10 plus horses, and then Gam Gam Joanne with a 41. And this one ends up going off at 6-1. So I think in, well, I'll call it a spicy race, even though, you know, you went seven deep and stuff like that. But these are the type of races why, you know, I wanted to do this podcast in general. And this is a horse that, you know, I think when you red board, if you don't learn from this race, you know, I think this type of race discussion helps you in the coming weeks at Gulfstream Park on the synthetic.
Yeah, and here's another thing. I mean, this is a long time adage, and it has nothing to do with synthetics. It's just in general, but it certainly applies to Gam Gam Joanne. The main reason she was six on Saturday is because she was 46 last time. And mm-hmm. I think the betting public sees that. They view it as a fluke. And if you believe in that race, that's why, you know, you swing at 6-1, because, you know, she should be lower than that. But I've always thought this, those crazy odds races scare the betting public next time, and they definitely allow you to get overlays on horses like Gam Gam Joanne who fit like a glove, but the betting public doesn't really think it because of the huge odds in the preceding race.
You call it an old adage. It's another Mark Kramer reference for me on the pod. Just, you know, he calls it the overachiever angle. You find a horse that ran it over, you know, 10-12-1, and hopefully in the next three races after that big race or that big jump up, they're kind of racing in the similar conditions. This one was doing that. ends up getting the money, $15 at 6-1. Let's move on to the next race, the final race of this podcast, race number 11. We're going to jump it up a little bit here. Optional 25 N1X, 6 furlongs on the dirt. This race, I felt a little bit better about. One I really liked right off the rip was Paco's Pico. Just the 82 last time out, now we have a layoff for Rohan Christian. Just 27% off these long layoffs. I mean, I forget how good Pletcher used to be, but I feel like it was the same type of number, him and Chad, just off these long, long layoffs. And if you look, horse ran okay on debut, third beaten by 4. But I just thought that that last race, you know, maybe it would have been the turning point, had run an 82 prior to that, 3 back, but was in such good form. Now we get a layoff, which can be scary, but this one loves Gulfstream Park, 4-for-4 at the distance. I thought this is the right kind of spot here at 9-2, bringing this one back on the morning line.
Yeah, I was. He was my top pick as well. And, you know, Rohan Crichton started a little slow, and he's a very high percentage guy who started slow, but he has been picking it up and had been picking it up at the time of this race. I there's a lot to like about this. The layoff is what it is, but he's got Miguel Vasquez, okay? Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's going to change here in the next month or so. But with Edgar Zayas riding a lot out of town and kind of coming in and coming out, Miguel Vasquez is just so, he's hands down the best we have. And he just, he rides a lot for Rohan, so it's not a thing here. But you got to pay attention to who he gets on, because he instantly moves horses up. Well, he's here. You know, this horse had two big figures, and the slow figure was actually a race he won. The two slow figures, I should say. Rohan off the claim 4 times with this horse, all big efforts. Like I said, the layoff doesn't bother me either. And he's not in for a tag. And I think that's significant, because obviously, you know, we run the optional claimers, starter optional claimers, a lot of tracks do. And, you know, you got to decipher those kinds of things. Are you in for the tag? Are you not in for the tag? Paco's Pico was not. That's always a confident, a positive. We're drawn perfectly outside. And, you know, just some other horses in here. Okay, you could argue Embar's the most talented horse, but he's away from Bob Baffert, and he's been off a long, long layoff, and as good a job as Kent Sweezy does. He's 1-for-25 on this elongated layoff. Pletcher gets the 3. Meet me in Kingston, and Todd's in the Hall of Fame for a million different reasons. But, you know, Boogie Mirage had this horse, and Boogie's a damn good trainer too, and he's running a 74-75, and now he hasn't been out since July. You know, why all of a sudden is this horse going to blow up for Todd when he hasn't done anything like that before? I just thought, you know, clearly it was Granger County to beat. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, one of the big figures was on the slop, and the other one last time behind the distractor. You know, maybe those two races, which are as far and away and he's better than anything he's done, maybe he regresses a little bit. And Paco's Pico gets him at the right time, too. So, yeah, I like this horse on Saturday.
I feel like as well, and for you, you brought up the other two big horses off the layoff, too, Granger County being the only one that wasn't. But you could definitively poke holes everywhere. At least, like, okay, sure, you're taking Paco's Pico at 4-1, what they end up going off at, but it's the better price of pretty much all of them. A-Bar went off at 5-1, but I'm not taking, you know, horses out of Baffert's Barn for J.K. Sweezy. I'm sorry, I'm just never doing that. But at least you have, like, okay, all three are off of a layoff. At that point, I'm not saying it's, you know, you're you know, hoping for the best roll of the dice. Granger County, for me, also, like you had said, 90-89, last two out, hasn't run anything remotely like this. I mean, that screams bounce for me here. And this one, like you had said, not for Paco's Pico, this one was in for the tag as well.
Well, no doubt about it. Bobby DeBona reads a condition book as good as anybody in the country, and here this horse is in for a quarter. So you got to, I'm glad you mentioned it because I forgot, you got to take a step back a little bit and say, whoa, 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 what's going on here? You got a 90, what do you got, a 90? You got an 89 sitting on your face there. The distractor is 2 noses away from winning 6 straight races. And here you can have Granger County for a quarter. That's the old tread lightly angle right there. And, you know, because like I said, Bobby D is as sharp as anybody out there. And for him to dangle this horse for a quarter says, I wonder if we're going the wrong way now, you know?
Consensus pick here in the finale of the pod. We're going Paco's Pico here at 4-1. Let's see if we can get it done here right now.
They're off in the Saturday night camp Up on the outside, Paco's Pico fired up. Concrete Glory moves through dead at the inside. Meet Me in Kingston. Also zipping out there quickly with Inbar in between horses. Extreme outside, Granger County. Trying to rally up there. It was a nice beginning as Meet Me in Kingston battles on with Concrete Glory. Inbar right there with Paco's Pico to his outside. Ludington about racing in the fifth spot. Too much action ridden out sixth. Granger Caddy's dropped out last. The quarter 22-1. Solid opening mark. Meet Me in Kingston battles on with Concrete Glory. Paco's Pico begins to vault up three wide. The gray Ludington trying to put together a rally from fourth. Granger Caddy sweeping up three wide. Too much action in between. They move towards the top of the stretch here. The nightcap. Paco's Pico has taken over with a two-length lead. Ludington continues to battle. A rally there in 2 seconds. Three wide off the turn. Here's Granger County. They turn for home with the nightcap. Paco's Pico trying to buckle down and fend off Ludington. Ludington continues to rally up at the outside. Granger County works it a third. Too much action. His fourth. A battle here between Paco's Pico and Ludington in the nightcap. Paco's Pico.
And Paco's Pico does get it done. $10 the winning mutual. $87 the winning buyer. It kind of feels good when everything in the handicapping process goes right. And this is one of those races where Meet Me in Kingston, regression. Granger County, regression. Ibar, regression. Paco's Pico, the only one that really improves. You can say that we were lucky out of all the horses with the layoffs is the one that got the improve. But we also got the right price to take a shot with that type of angle.
Yeah, and it's easy to say after too. But, you know, he was the horse that was, you know, probably likely to run that race. Whereas, okay, even if a Hall of Fame trainer Pletcher improves Meet Me in Kingston, he still might not win. And I don't have the chart. I think they bet the heck out of that horse, if I remember correctly, too. So, yeah, I mean, obviously there were some scratches, took out a bunch of points, but still. So, you're right, Spencer. This did feel good, and it was for all the right reasons, too. And, I think in hindsight, with what's that, 23 points coming off the morning line for Paco's Pico to still – 4-1 off that 9-2 price. I was pretty happy with that.
And I'll say this too, just looking back again for myself, just since they got this one off the claim, they won a second, a win, and a second. This horse has never missed the board. So, you know, is it scary that, oh, this one, you know, goes to the bench? Sure. But I mean, what has he done wrong with this horse that we can't expect him to come back? You know, when they win first off the claim like that, I feel like it's just kind of coming off a layoff. They're getting the horse fresh into the barn for the first time. They're building him up just kind of how they would off of a layoff. And I think, like we had said, and again, you know, Miguel Vasquez, 23%. There was a lot to like here for this one. And to end up with a $10 horse, and like we'd even talked about in the last race, a $15 horse, I think it's definitely horses like this that can make or break your day for sure.
Oh, man, but without a doubt, I mean, you get two of those and you're guaranteed a winner on the day, at least ROI-wise. So, you just got to take advantage of situations like that. You know, I'm not sitting here to tell you I bet with both hands on Paco's Pico off of May layoff. But, you know, that was a square price. And, you know, those are horses you can kind of use aggressively, maybe in horizontals as well. So, yeah, it's when it all comes together, it's as you know, I don't have to tell you, it doesn't always come together. So you gotta take it and run.
It most definitely does not. That is all the time we have for tonight's podcast. I do want to thank my special guest, Brian Natto, for coming on. Brian, where can people catch you and, you know, all the lovely Gulfstream goodness this coming winter?
Yeah. So, like, I don't know if we said it live or I said it to you previously. We go back to 5 days in a couple weeks. We've got turf racing coming up. So you can see me on the on your local simulcast feed. We got the morning show with Ron and myself. What was that? 11:25, and then all afternoon as well. And I'm on Twitter, Brian_J_Natto. So keep it on, keeping on, and we're amped to get back on the green stuff. We kind of show it every day on the morning show, and we're running a commercial now with Aiden Butler is on it, talking about it, and you can see it. It looks great. It looks phenomenal. Took some time with it, but it is going to be back and better than ever. And, we can't wait. We cannot wait. It's going to, I think, you know, not only for the horses, but the betting and all that, the pools, it's just going to be huge all across the board.
Looking forward to racing on the green stuff this coming December. Thank you so much for coming on, Brian. Appreciate it.
Yeah, Spence, anytime, buddy.
Podcast on the In the Money Media Network. Also want to thank my special guest, Brian Natto, for coming on and talking everything Gulfstream Park with myself. This show has been a production of In the Money Media. In the Money Media's president is Peter Thomas Forenthal. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. And our In the Money Media business manager is Drew Coatney. I'm Spencer Luganbuehl. We will see you next time.